Welcome to the Startups Middle East podcast. I'm your host, Evrim, and I interview startup founders and people relevant to startups all around the Middle East. In this episode, I'm interviewing Yassine Abu Dawood. Yassine is a Hong Kong-born entrepreneur who has been in the global trading business for over 12 years, mainly through his family business, Essico Group. He is currently between the GCC, Hong Kong, and China as the COO of Brink, an IoT accelerator headquartered in Hong Kong. Brink recently opened its Middle East branch in Bahrain and rapidly became an important part of the startup ecosystem. A quick note about this interview to avoid confusion. This was recorded in 2017, so when we say next year, we mean 2018. Here's the interview. Yassine, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we will definitely talk about Brink. That is going to be the main topic probably. But I want to get started with you first, personally. You were born in Hong Kong. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
As it is very obvious from the way you look.
Not at all.
Anyone who doesn't know that, why it's funny, by the way, you know, you should look up Yassine's pictures on the internet. You could probably be on a book cover on the Aryan race. And being born in Hong Kong is just, it's a very interesting thing.
Well, I think Hong Kong's a pretty multicultural place. So around the time when I was there, back in the 80s, I mean, you had a lot of folks come in from all over the world, get established there. And it's until now, it's become a very international city. So I'm fortunate to be one of those folks who was exposed to Asia and its culture and obviously its community too.
So what was the connection? Your parents were there for what reason exactly, if you could share that?
Yeah, so my parents and family saw a very big business opportunity exporting obviously from China via Hong Kong. So they had moved there in 1976, established their business there, which is still running today, which is called Essico, which is obviously focused on supply chain management, procurement. And we, until today, ship various products from fashion, electronics, technology to all over the world, predominantly, I would say, Europe and the U.S. And we've been there for almost 41 years now, strong. And now our operations have obviously shifted from back in the day when it was predominantly Hong Kong to now move to Hong Kong and China. A lot of folks now, obviously, because of China's evolving nature, have now stepped up and now base most of their operations in China rather than Hong Kong.
That's really cool. I wanted to talk about Essico. I didn't know that it was your parents' company.
Yes. It's our legacy company, if you want to call it.
Yeah, that's cool. So how many years were you in Hong Kong?
So I spent about 10 years in Hong Kong. I finished my 10-year stint there, and then from there I departed to Canada. I went to Toronto, Ontario for about 15 years, finished my education, also my undergrad there. And then from there, I did a quick stint in the Middle East, but then I spent most of my time post that. I did about 10 years back in Asia, but that was mainly in mainland China, not really in Hong Kong. You know, in the year 2000, we shifted most of our operations out to China. So I spent most of my time there and resided there until about 2015, approximately.
Okay, that's interesting. So, before Brink, tell us a little bit about your background. What did you do at Essico? What other things have you done?
So, my focus at Essico really was I was the director of sales, where my focus was to go and work with clients abroad, look at what their needs are in terms of supply chain management. So to give you an example, on the real estate side, we did a lot of procurement products for developers and hotels. So I helped build the Ritz-Carlton in Panama, the Dusit Thani in Egypt, Cairo to be exact. Also, we did a project for the Four Points Sheraton in Mecca and Saudi Arabia. So what we would do is we would really take all the requirements from our clients and see what they need in terms of building materials like floorings, vanities, even like all the hotel amenities for the kitchens, the common areas. We would procure all these things in China. We'd also set up like a mock-up. So for example, We would do a finished room that would, you know, have the look like, feels like of how the room is, how it operates. Client would come in, you know, they'd be happy with the product or they might have a few, you know, concerns. We would make those amendments, adjust them, and then we would manufacture and ship them out. We didn't do too much work in terms of the localization of the product when it got to their sites, but really the objective was to procure all the products directly from the factory instead of working with a third party in their local market, which would allow the customer to save at least, you know, 20 to 30% on their products after shipping and taxes. So it made sense for large projects. So we've been doing that for a long time. The other side of our business that we focus on, which is very big too, is also our fashion. So we work with a lot of large companies like Inditex, who own the brands of Zara, Bershka, and Massimo Dotti. So we do a lot of their their products. And obviously, in fashion, we only work in high volume. We are now considering actually to go into a new direction of maybe some kind of a fashion program or accelerator that we're looking into now. But predominantly, we've worked with large customers for fashion. And it's been going great. I mean, the market's changing. China's been, you know, much more exposed and transparent. But, you know, we have good clients and we have a good track record behind us.
Okay, cool. Ritz-Carlton in Panama, that place must have a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, beautiful place. Very, very, very nice. It's actually very similar to Bahrain, to be
really?
Honest. It has a lot of the same elements. Small island, has a lot of international influence, but very, very cool place.
That's cool. So, okay, let's talk about Brink then. What do you guys do at Brink? Could you just explain to Brink to people who might not have heard of it?
Okay, so Brink was really a culmination of a lot of folks that came together about 3 years ago who were in a whole bunch of different businesses. Some of us came from software, some came from hardware, some came from you know, large corporations in the U.S., and we really came together and wanted to look at what the journey looks like for any kind of IoT startup. We knew that you know, applications and software was a very saturated market and it was only going to get more saturated. So we wanted to focus on seeing how we can support IoT founders from their idea to the end result. So really Brink comes down to a couple of core things that we do. So the first thing is that we have our Enter China platform, which is called Connect, which is really our open forum that allows founders from all over the world to look at how to manufacture in China. The next step is our pillar of Accelerator, where this is where we focus on our education and how to take a team from their idea stage to their manufacturing ready stage. And then from there, we have our Make pillar, which is this is where we focus and our offices in China and Hong Kong help support you in making your product. And our final stage is growth, where here we support in doing the sales and distribution for you globally. So these four pillars really culminate what Brink does. And each pillar has a different revenue model and a different way to engage with the founders. In some ways, we engage in like equity positions, which is usually on the Accelerate side. Connect is more of a monthly fee to join our forums. Make is something focused on a retainer model to support you in building your product in China. And then something like growth is usually focused on a percentage of sales that we work on with the teams to close distribution deals globally. So it's really those four things that we work on. And this is all based around IoT. Our focus is around IoT and that's our sweet spot.
So let's say I'm a maker. I have some prototype of a product or some idea and I have done some prototyping before. And I want to start build a company around it, or I want to build this product and sell it. So I go to you guys. How do you guys approach a person like that?
Well, I think the important thing is that when someone does approach us, you know, we really look at how the founders are and what they do, and really what does the team look like. You know, accelerators are not really there to do the work for you. I mean, that's what a consultant does. We are there to focus on enabling you to get the job done and to get the job done faster, hence the word accelerator. So we look at the founders. So we would look at you and say, listen, you know, who's on the team? You know, we would love to have, you know, a great CEO, someone who can lead. We'd love to have someone, you know, on the software side who can support, you know, to push the hardware forward, and then someone who can also develop the hardware. Those are the three main things that we look for in a founder. So if you got three founders, or sorry, a founder and three folks, and a good idea and maybe a little bit of capital, that's when we're really interested to see, you know, where we can take you and how we can cooperate together.
So there are some accelerators that have a fixed amount of equity they take in exchange of a certain program and a certain amount of money. Do you guys do that, or is it? It changes on, you know, depending on...
No, I think it changes. I mean, you know, like sometimes we've gone as low as, you know, 5 to 6%. Sometimes we've gone as high as, you know, 12 to 13%. So it really depends on the stage of where the founders are. And also, we have to look at the longevity of the company, right? Like, how long is this going to take? Sometimes you look at businesses where, you know, it could be some really, really deep tech stuff that we know is going to take, you know, some really serious time to get to and to be able to develop. So it really depends on where the founders are and what the journey looks like. So those are the factors that we think about, yeah.
How about in terms of investment? Do you invest any cash, or is it just
the experience? Yeah, of course. I mean, right now, like we're actually announcing today with Artisian that we'll be doing investments with them, 28 investments next year. And that'll be between our offices in Barcelona and in Hong Kong. And what we do is that, you know, we'll invest in the company about $100,000, and there'll be some fees above that'll be paid to Brink, and that'll be for about an 8 to 12% equity position.
Okay.
And that's just for the accelerate side. For the make side, when we offer services from China to help you manufacture, that's usually done on a retainer model, not on an equity position.
I understand. Okay. Why did you guys choose to come to Bahrain?
Well, I mean, Bahrain was a very interesting choice. Bahrain has a very old history to it, and it's actually a legacy. It's done a lot of things in the last 130 years, and we were excited to come here and see what are the potential opportunities. Obviously, you know, we looked at Dubai, we looked at Saudi, we looked at a lot of places. We find that Bahrain was a very good balance between, you know, modernity also to the local talent and also to the cost of living here. Dubai obviously is a great choice too, but Dubai, we felt like it was more of a transit hub. People go there for a short period of time and leave. We felt like Bahrain could be a place where you could really establish yourself and be able to not just look at the local market, to look at the market as a region. And Bahrain does a great job of doing that. I mean, I know lots of folks here who are in Bahrain who actually don't do a lot of work here, but they're traveling a lot, they're exploring a lot of opportunities, you know, whether it's in Saudi, the GCC, but even all the way to Istanbul, Tunisia, and the whole MENA region, all out of Bahrain. So there's a lot of opportunity out of here, and it's a great place to be.
Okay. How about what do you actually expect to do in Bahrain? Do you guys already have some startups or some IoT device companies that you want to work with in Bahrain? Anyone applied?
So currently right now, what we're doing is we're just building our co-working space. And this IoT hub that we're calling it is going to be one of the first in the Middle East. It's going to have a maker space. It's going to have an event space of up to 100 people. It's going to have co-working up to 70 people. And this is really going to be our hub to start. In terms of our program, we do aim to launch a program by the first quarter of next year. I'm not really at liberty to discuss the details of that program, but we do aim to launch it hopefully by Q1, and I promise you'll be the first one to find out when we are ready to launch.
Well, the secrecy makes it more interesting, so I'm curious now.
In terms of your questions, in terms of the investments that we've seen so far, there's actually been about two or three different investments that we've seen in Bahrain. We've seen about two or three out of Egypt who have all shown some really strong interest in coming here. So we're excited to hopefully get that started, like I said, by the kickoff of 2018.
All right. So you guys are very active in the Bahrain's startup ecosystem. And I see that you're taking an important position here. You're trying to educate people. I see you at many events. So you have when did you come to Bahrain exactly?
So the first time I came to Bahrain, I had moved my family here in 2015, which is about almost 2.5 years ago. But I was still working out of HQ in Hong Kong and Guangzhou. And just recently, I'd say maybe about 6 to 7 months ago, where I've been here predominantly full time, focusing on building the hub. We cemented our relationship with the with Batelco, who is our JV right now, on the ground on building this hub. And that happened about a year ago. We started doing that, and I have to also mention too that we also had a lot of help from the EDB. I mean, they really connected all the dots for us and supported us on getting on the ground here and getting our feet wet with the right folks. So we're very fortunate to work with them. John Kilmartin, for example, and also Khaled Ramehi, both of them really, really supported us.
Yeah, ADB is very helpful, and you know, John is great. I can attest to that. So you've been here for a while. What do you think of Bahrain's startup ecosystem? What do you think has changed since you arrived here, and where do you think it is going?
Well, I remember when I first got here, there really wasn't much going on. You know, I remember about 2.5 years ago, I had a first chat with Dr. Simon Galpin from the EDB, and we were just talking about, you know, what is the ecosystem, what is it looking like, and what needs to get done. And, you know, we put some steps together with a couple of folks locally here, and we built some strategies. And it's, I think predominantly it's been going in the right direction. Do I think it's been going at the right speed? Probably not. I would have hoped for it to go a little bit faster. However, you know, Bahrain's putting together a very strong proposition for the region of why to come to Bahrain in comparison to other places. You know, you have access to Saudi. The cost of living is very reasonable. What's amazing about Bahrain is that there's some really fantastic local talent here, which really makes it helpful so that if you do need to find the right folks to work with, it is possible. Capital is starting to flow up. You know, we have the Angel Investor Network, which is run by Tenmo, which is very, very smart folks there. And we think overall that, you know, for us at Brink, that we look at our success is hand in hand with Startup Bahrain. If we can preach the great things about Bahrain and we can attract the best founders here, that's better for Brink. And what's better for Brink is better for the ecosystem and vice versa. So we're really trying to pull a double whammy here and try and get everyone involved and push us as far as we can go to really put Bahrain on the map. Because if Bahrain is on the map, it's going to benefit the whole ecosystem and in turn benefit all the partners, which could be, you know, corporates, accelerators, startups, government, the education system, really everybody.
I completely agree with that. This is, you know, one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast, because, you know, I'm a startup founder, but the better the ecosystem here, the better it is for me and for everyone. So it's very important to, you know, do something. We should all be trying to do something. So what do you think? So Bahrain has, as you said, access to Saudi, and also I came here about 3 years ago. There was seriously nothing in terms of startups here. There was barely any event, and people didn't really talk about startups. And there's a very rapid change. I can see that too. As you said, you know, do I think it's fast enough? Yeah, I would like it to be faster, but there's some change going in the right direction. So let's talk about what's missing. What do you think is some of the biggest things Bahrain lacks, and what do you think we can do about those things?
Well, I don't think there's like major things missing. I think that what we need here is we need folks to really look at how can we kind of escalate things. So for example, you know, in terms of our events here, you know, there's no shortage of events in Bahrain. We have events literally every single day. However,
definitely now, yeah.
Yeah, I think we have to focus on the content of these events and maybe, you know, how we can include folks from the region, from the world to come and really shed light on what they think are the important things in the world of technology and other verticals. But, you know, I think that if we just try and make things a little bit better, like events, roadshows, for example, like, you know, we do lots of roadshows via the EDB and Startup Bahrain, right? But if we can get more folks involved in these roadshows, that would be better. So I think that, you know, there are ways to improve. I would say the first thing is maybe to have a couple of key events that are maybe more content driven with the right people, not just kind of the same folks saying the same thing. That's the first thing. Number two, I would think that, you know, we need to also build on the education for investors. You know, there's lots of capital in this region, especially in Bahrain. But the problem is that the capital is all focused on traditional investments. You know what I mean? Like, you know, either, you know, old style businesses, real estate, you know, F&B, you know, people aren't really aware of, you know, the world of technology and of course the risks too. I mean, you know, it is obviously more of a risk, but there's also much more of an upside. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see how over the next few years, how we look at how investments will be diversified from, you know, traditional investment tools into maybe things like, you know, startups and technology and even scale-ups.
Hey there, it's Evrim again. I hope you're enjoying the interview. Before we continue, though, I have a quick announcement to make. I'm the founder of a startup called Automated Hotel, and we're working on redefining the guest experience in the hospitality industry. The guest experience is still very traditional in hotel rooms. Print menus and marketing materials, phone calls for requests. We are developing in-room tablets that allow hotel guests to manage their stay and request services from the hotel while helping the hotel collect insightful guest data and save staff time. No matter where you're listening to this from, if you're a software developer with experience in React Native or Ruby on Rails, or if you're an investor interested in investing in an opportunity like this, or if you're just interested in the idea and would like to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with me at evrim@automatedhotel.com. It's E-V-R-I-M @automatedhotel.com. Or by sending a message through the contact form on startupsmiddleeast.com. All right, back to the interview. So it's really nice to hear your comments on the events. So I feel the same way about them. We really need some people who actually have some experience building bigger stuff, like bigger startups, talk about their experience and share that instead of, as you said, same people repeating the same things.
Yeah.
So do you guys have any plans to contribute to that with Brink?
Yeah. So with our space that we're building, we're going to have up to 80 to 100 people able to attend our events in the office. Now, the important thing is that with these events is that we do want to get folks from all over the region to come and really understand about what investments are, what VCs are, and educate them also on the risks too. You know, I mean, there are a lot of folks out there who really also don't know what these investments are and what the risks entail. So we do plan with Batelco to run a lot of workshops and a lot of investment talks from our space.
I was listening to this podcast a while ago, Reid Hoffman's podcast on the name escapes me now. So they were talking. He was talking to this woman who has this company helping different ecosystems around the world, or creating startup ecosystems around the world. And what she was talking about was that anywhere she goes, what she needed was just one company, one person that they could help, someone who has some vision, some experience, some, you know, knowledge, and help that person. And when you have one successful person, the rest just comes much easier. So I think also Bahrain needs a success like that, that we can say, hey, you know what, this companies, it's not just about, you know, either creating a startup, hiring someone, or, you know, raising money. It's a company that has some kind of, you know, a company that people know outside the Middle East, maybe. I think we need a company like that here.
Well, you know, I think that we do have a couple of success stories. I mean, you know, you look at the folks at Skip Lino and OneGCC. I mean, they've done a fantastic job.
Definitely,
you know, raising funds, hiring locals. I mean, and they're really attacking a couple of serious problems. Now, I think that moving forward, though, you know, these stories need to be played out and followed. I mean, I know that Harith Al Atawi and Zaman Zaman, I mean, they were in Forbes. They won awards.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think they're doing a fantastic job of showcasing, you know, what anyone can do from Bahrain, and they've been very quick to market, and they've done a fantastic job. So I think that overall, you know, we have some great things going on here. But I do agree with you that, you know, we do need more. You know, I mean, to two companies is not enough. And hopefully we see your startup be on that list too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm hoping for that too. I'm working hard. So, let's talk about a little bit about you then. So, how do you manage your time? For example, I see you're a very busy man, and you have, you're contributing to Brink, you're contributing to the ecosystem here. What tools do you use? What do you do to manage your time?
Well, I wake up very early in the morning. That's the first thing. I think that, I'm able to do a lot of stuff because really at Brink, we have a great system, the way that we work, the way that we also cooperate with HQ. You know, the best thing is that, you know, when we came to Bahrain, it's not like we're starting from scratch. We are an established business. You know, we have over 35 employees right now, just alone in Asia. So I think that we're in good shape there. You know, in Bahrain, it's taken a long time, I think, to get a lot of the stuff done. People here are a little bit slow in terms of, you know, just the day-to-day stuff. So I'm trying my best to also, you know, reinvigorate the spirit, get people involved, get them moving faster. So that's been helping too. But overall, I mean, you know, everything that we do for us at Brink, we treat ourselves as an online company too, right? I mean, we're able to get anything done, do anything virtually. Back in the day, you know, in business, you had to fly somewhere to do a meeting, this and that. Now really everything is done virtually. You know, for example, like, you know, we get the entire company from Barcelona, from Bahrain, from Hong Kong, Guangzhou, Shenzhen. Every Thursday, we have a town hall meeting, getting everyone together. We talk for 1 hour. And everyone says, you know, what have we done this week? You know, where are we at? Does anyone have any questions? So I think the important thing is that, you know, you need to get everyone on the same page. And I think that we're fortunate enough to get that done. And that helps with your operation, because then everyone is speaking the same language and everyone is working together. So I think that's really important.
Okay, so being a part of a good community or good group of people is the key, you're saying, to...
Yes.
Know? Okay. How about stress? How do you handle stress in your business life?
The gym.
Yeah?
Yeah, really. I mean, I think that work is really important and I dedicate a lot of my time to it. However, I do think that also, you know, you need to have a balance in your life between family, between work, you know. So I've been fortunate enough to do that. And, you know, you just got to make the time for it.
Okay. So I don't know if it comes very easy for you, because whenever I see you, you're always smiling. You're very approachable. So you're doing a good job handling stress,
well,
I guess.
I'm trying my best. I'm really trying my best.
How about what is something that you're not very good at that you would like to improve, that you're trying to improve maybe?
I think a big problem that I have is that I'm sometimes extremely impatient. One thing that I've noticed here is that at times I'm just not able to cope with the way people operate at the speed that they are, which I have an issue with. And also sometimes I think that you know, that can allow me to turn into a very, very difficult person to work with, because, you know, when I was in China, you know, people work very, very hard there. In China, it's not a place where people relax and take it easy. People are very focused on the task at hand, and they don't give up until it gets done. I think that in other parts of the world, when you leave China, you realize that, you know, people really believe in the, you know, the 9 to 5, where in Bahrain really it's the 7 to 3. You know, in China, there is no 9 to 5. Work needs to get done, and it needs to get done. So that was a big learning curve for me when I came here, to realize that, you know, I can't just expect everything to be the way that I want whenever it wants.
That's very interesting. So maybe we can talk a little bit about China then.
Sure.
How are things there? I hear that, you know, a lot of people say that some cities in China, like Shenzhen, Shanghai, they can be the next Silicon Valley. They're, you know, in process of becoming the next Silicon Valley. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because right now in China, what's happening is you know, for a very long time, the Guangdong province, which is in southern China, which is the capital of it, is Guangzhou, and it's about an hour, or it's actually bordering Hong Kong, has really been like the the manufacturing machine for the PRC. And currently, right now, there's a very big initiative taking place called the Greater Bay Area. But what they're trying to do is they're really trying to connect the major cities of southern China and the Pearl River Delta, which is Hong Kong, Macau, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, and that area there. And they want to turn that into really just one huge, you know, technology area of the world where literally everything is made there. You know, there's so much innovation coming out of there. There's at least, you know, 50 million people living in that area, or sorry, maybe 30 to 40 million people living out of that area. So it's a really, really important part of China's new vision for technology. Tencent is there. Huawei is there. You know, Xiaomi is there. Really, I mean, all the big boys are there. And I think that China is not really focused on replicating Silicon Valley. They're just going to create their own valley or region, whatever you want to call it. And it's going to be exciting to see, you know, how they're going to work, because they're even trying to reduce all the borders. So you can literally be in all these areas at one time as if you're in like one country. So it's going to be exciting to see how they move forward and how PRC is going to focus on technology in this area.
That comment that you made about not copying Silicon Valley, I think it's a very important one. And I see that happen sometimes here in Bahrain, honestly. And there, what happens is Silicon Valley grew organically. And when you try to create the same thing without having gone through that process, some things look like it, but they don't really have that much substance. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, let's say about the events. I see many events now. It feels like people just want to say, hey, you know what? We need to have events, but you know, why do we need to have an event? What are we trying to achieve? You know, those questions don't always get asked. So I think it's very important to ask why. You know, this thing we are going to be doing, why are we going to be doing that? So I think that comment that you made is very important. Not copying, yeah, but
I mean, I agree with you, because China, you know, their why. So for some folks who don't know, in China, when you're landing in China, your Facebook, Instagram, Gmail, all that stuff doesn't work anymore without a VPN. And some people say, well, you know, I mean, why? You know, like, why doesn't China allow that? Well, because China believes that they should have their own platforms. There's no reason why they should, rely on others to do that. Why should they give up the market share? So I think it's important, the same thing we said, that they have no reason to copy Silicon Valley. They can really create whatever is good for them, right? And that's what the focus should be.
It's very interesting. I never thought about that internet blocking, censoring that way. Maybe, yeah, that's something that contribute to their success. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
So what are some of your suggestions to entrepreneurs in Bahrain? If you were to start a company here, it's a vague question, I know. But what path would you choose? Is there anything specific that you would do in Bahrain, or any place specific that you would go? What path would you follow?
For Bahrain, you know, I've met a lot of founders who have a lot of great ideas. I think, though, that the pace needs to be faster. People need to really think out of the box and think about what is the problem that they want to solve. So I've met a lot of startups here who think they have great ideas, but I find that a lot of the problems that they want to solve are problems that don't really need solving. And I think that's where the problem lies. No pun intended. So for example, you know, we at Brink, you know, we have four main areas that we think we as a company need to focus on, which is how we eat, how we live, how we move, and how we grow. So how we eat, for example, is, you know, what are we going to eat? You know what I mean? Agricultural. The environment, how we live, you know, in terms of, you know, your health, how we eat, how we move. Now we're talking about logistics, drones, you know, how we're moving in the future. And then how we grow also, the health sector, very, very important. So we believe that if you're going to create a startup and you want to do a business, there has to be a real problem that you want to solve. Like Skip Lino, for example, they did a great job because really they're solving a serious problem, and it's everywhere in the world. You go to a bank, you go to some kind of institution, you have to take a ticket and wait. Why would you do that when you can just do it online with the real time tracking and real time queuing? And they do it. They're really solving a problem. But I've seen, you know, stories of startups here, which they know. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't want to mention too much of what it does. Where I see, well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like a cool feature. It sounds like a cool product. But would I really want to have it? Like, could I install it on my phone or use a device? Okay. And the very next day, stop using it and feel like my life has changed. I think that's really important, that if you start using something or adapting yourself to using something, if you feel the same way the next day, okay, without that product, that means you really haven't impacted someone's life.
That's a very interesting perspective. Yeah, I like that. I like that. I mean, it all boils down to asking why, in my opinion. Why do people need this? Why do people want this? And, you know, as Y Combinator's motto, make something people want.
Yeah,
that's the most important thing. But that your perspective, it's very interesting. Yeah, if you wake up tomorrow lacking that thing that you had, would you feel like you're missing something? Would your life be worse without it? That's really cool. So, what are some resources that helped you at Brink or, you know, working at Essico? Some maybe they can be blogs or books or websites or even people that have given you some insightful knowledge.
You know, I actually never studied tech, and I'm not even an engineer. But really, I can tell you that I did my undergrad, and I say this in a funny way. I did my undergrad in Canada, but I feel like spending 10 years in China allowed me to do my MBA and my PhD in learning about the world. It enabled me to travel everywhere, learn about different cultures, different products, different verticals, and then seeing where it came from and how it came from in China. I think that when you look at the full supply chain, it really allows you to look at a full business. So I'm able to meet somebody, see the product that they want, learn about that product, go to the actual manufacturer, learn how that product's made, take that product, send it to my, you know, client, and then see how that goes from my client to the end user. So it's really interesting that I get to see the full supply chain, which is pretty rare in anyone's business. And I think that I know that I would encourage anybody to go to China to learn as much as you can about this process and learn, you know, how things are made, how China operates as a whole. Because I think that when you see that, you'll have a completely different perspective on everything that you do.
So I know we've been all over the place, but I just want to ask you about, you said there's a lot of technical talent in Bahrain. In some areas, I agree. But just because, you know, Bahrain is a small island, the, you know, population-wise, it's not huge. It just, you know, lowers your chances of finding people. What do you think some things that can be done about it? For example, do you guys work with universities?
So currently right now, you know, we've been having conversations with the Polytechnic University and U of B, which is University of Bahrain. And I think everyone's excited to see how IoT can shape Bahrain and how they can get involved. I've been doing a lot of talks with the, you know, with some of the engineering students to see, you know, if they can turn some of these ideas that they have into actual proper businesses. And there is a bit of a learning curve there, but I think that we're making some headway, and I think that we're going to see a lot of changes coming through the education system over the next couple of years. I know that Cameron at the University of Bahrain has been doing a lot of great stuff and planning, and they have a great vision planned out for the next couple of years. So it'll be exciting to see what comes up.
Okay, sounds great. I want to be respectful to your time, so I will just end it with asking you, how can people find you on the internet? So what are you on Twitter? What website should they go to?
So the best thing to do is you can find me honestly by email, which is at Yasin@brink.io. Feel free to reach out to me to anything you need, whether it's IoT or non-IoT related. I've been really happy and really honored to have this interview with you, Evrim, and I hope you can have us back one day on the show, and we can even get into some more conversations even with some other folks. But yeah, please reach out to me for anything you need. More than happy to connect.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Yassine. I really, really appreciate your time and you coming on the podcast. Thanks a lot.
All right. You take care of them, and we'll chat soon.
You too. Take care. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the Startups Middle East podcast. You can see the show notes and find out more about the podcast at startupsmiddleeast.com. If you like this episode, I'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on iTunes. Until next time.